You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Get to the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe on YouTube, like this episode, follow all the social media accounts, sign up for the free newsletter, and generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. Geoff, you kind of look like, you know, like in those documentaries where like the guy used to be like in the mafia or live a life of crime, and now like he doesn't want to be identified. And so it's like shaded and like his voice is muddled. I feel like I can barely see you. Yeah, I feel like I can barely see you.
I know we discussed this before. That's exactly what I was going to say. Not even kidding you. I feel a witness protection program. Yeah, for the mafia.
That's what I was looking for. Yep. Witness protection.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. But you look great, though.
Thank you. As do you. Nice beard. Lovely beard you got going on there.
Thank you.
It's all so white.
Yeah, I know. It's like Santa Claus.
It is. Distinguished.
The NRL had to take that, Matt. Thanks a lot.
I like it.
It looks great.
It's not long for this world. I probably won't keep it much longer. But yeah, every now and then I like to let it run.
Don't shave it. Keep it.
Yeah.
Keep it.
Well, as all Common Fan listeners know, the voice of the Common Fan reaches far and wide across the windswept.
Yes, plains. It does.
And we love hearing from our Common Fan listeners, our Common Fan community. We love this community that we've built. So commonfangbr@gmail.com. Always feel free to send us an email. Send us an email. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us if you agreed. Tell us if you disagreed. Whatever, however you feel. I spent the weekend, I was a little behind. Was kind of catching up on some emails, replying to some folks who had emailed the Common Fan account. And always love hearing from all of you. Even if you think an episode sucked, you can tell us that too. This one made me laugh.
Don't reach out if you're going to say that. I don't want to hear it. I'm not reading it.
Well, you're very sensitive, John. Very sensitive. Yeah, it's some thicker skin. Dan from Greeley, a good friend of the program, came to the tailgate last fall, communicates with us quite often. This one just made me laugh. This was our Monday episode, the day after Easter. Hey guys, your transition from trying to be more like Jesus to loving the word butthole was a thing of beauty.
In the moment, I was talking to Ashley about that. In the moment, I did not even realize that we did that. Like sometimes we say things and it's like I black out for a second. Like that is the funniest thing ever. The transition from Jesus to butthole.
Yeah. Anyway, I won't read the rest of the email, but it was that just made me laugh a lot. I agree with you, Geoff. I'll do that too, where I'm like, I totally forgot I said that, or like I said 2015, and that actually happened in 2017, and yeah. I have no realization of it in the moment while we're recording.
Sure.
We also heard from Stu Manji on Twitter. He's a great Twitter follow, big data guy. He sent us some data that we shared on the last episode. And then we had a little email back and forth after that. So thanks again to Eric. Love the contributions. And again,
data or data? What do you say? You say data?
I guess I say both. I don't know.
I don't know.
You data.
Data, use the data. Use the front door from now on.
Goonies reference. If you know, you know.
Goonies.
Anyway, thanks to Eric. Again, we love hearing from all of you, all of the Common Fan community out there. Again, commonfangbr@gmail.com. Let us hear from you. And also you can find us on Twitter at commonfangbr. And that's where the idea for today's episode came from. Again, Brett Baker, another great friend of the program, engages with us quite often. And he reached out on Twitter with a couple different show ideas. And we're going to take him up on one of those. So two pitches for future topics. I'll just read the one that matters today. Two, this was his second one. I think it's a really interesting topic to discuss. I feel like it's come up tangentially on here. It's come up sort of as an aside or as an occasional part of the conversation, but we've never spent a full episode kind of exploring it. And I think it's a really interesting one to think about. And it's relevant to us because we are the common fans, right? We are the voice of the common fans. Has the unbridled, loyal to a fault, be there no matter what nature of our fan base held the program back the last 20 years? A long way of asking, does an empty seat speak louder than a filled one?
That's deep.
Very interesting. What initial thoughts on that, guys?
Owens, you go first.
Like you said, I think at some point we brought this up, or somebody on the show, a guest or somebody brought this up, and it might have been B Vogues, or I don't know, I'm not sure. But this has been brought up. I know it has. And I think there's some validity to it. And at least you have to wonder if it's valid, you know, because we are so loyal and we are undefeated against empathy. Like,
We also have no empathy for any of you.
Iowa or anybody else, really. You have to wonder if it wasn't, you know, the so-called sellout streak wasn't still going, even though we all kind of roll our eyes when we hear about it. Or, you know, if in mid-October in a conference game, there's not much excitement, so there's 65,000 there instead of the reported 85, which that might have actually happened too. I hate to do this because I know you guys are alleged Cubs fan. Well, Jeff's an alleged Cubs fan. I know TJ's a legitimate Cubs fan.
No Cubs.
But it makes me think of St. Louis Cardinals.
Sorry, Jeff has no core beliefs. Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
No, he doesn't. It makes me think of my St. Louis Cardinals the last, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years where they're just kind of treading water. There's not a lot to get excited about for the fan base. They're going to be around 500 and probably miss the playoffs. That's kind of what it's felt like. But people still keep showing up, you know. And over the last couple of years, I've heard other, you know, on Twitter and things like that, other Cardinals fans saying, well, you know, the fans are just keep showing up. So they're still making money. So the ownership doesn't really care if they're winning or not. And that's kind of, and I'm like, God, that kind of feels like Nebraska football. Like, even though they haven't been nearly as successful as we've wanted them to be for the last 15 years, they've still been profitable. So the people that care about those kinds of things are looking at it saying, oh, we're still making several bunch of millions of dollars. What do we need to change, if anything? It's like, your product is not what it once was, right? Like, and I guess shame on me. I'm one of the guilty hundreds, if not thousands, well, for sure thousands, who still keep showing up. And while that is a good thing, and we have touted that forever and ever on this podcast, you have to wonder, like, would it be more meaningful and make a statement if, you know, we're 5-5 in November and just laid an egg against somebody if 20,000 people didn't show up? And it kind of lights a fire. But then I go back to, and I'm just rambling out at this point, but then I go back to what, like, we've talked about this too, like the constant revolving door isn't good either. So I would say, like, I don't think that we are like the sole problem or even half the problem. I think it's part of the problem because, you know, revolving door of coaches and hiring the wrong guys, that's pretty damn important too. So as a common fan, as a Husker fan, I'm not taking a heck of a lot of blame for this. We're doing what we're supposed to do, right?
That's a good point.
They need to improve the product for us because we're the ones that have been here the whole time.
Geoff, I want to get your take on this. The baseball analogy is a really interesting one because that conversation has 1,000% happened on Cubs Twitter too, which is basically like the course that made the playoffs last year and probably will again this year. But like in some down years, not that long ago, it was basically, I mean, Wrigley's always full. Everybody wants to go to Wrigley Field.
Regular season baseball.
Anyway, sorry. So that's an interesting analogy. Geoff, I want to get your take on this, and then I have some thoughts.
Okay. Here's my take on it.
Good one. I'll go now. No, just kidding. Sorry.
Owens comes at it from a dollar and cents perspective. My perspective is the common fans, us, our listeners, some of us out there just have such unreasonably high expectations, regardless of what reality is telling us. And sometimes I do believe that that does hurt the program because it puts undue pressure on a lot of the people running things that necessarily probably shouldn't be there right now. This season coming up is probably a great example of that, that we've talked about it on previous episodes. I mean, you think about where we were at during the Frost era, during the Riley era. We have made leaps and bounds of progress since then. Before, it was just, let's make a bowl game. We finally did it. Before, let's win that bowl game. We finally did it. Let's have a winning season. We finally did it. And I get it. You should always raise that bar a little bit more and a little bit more. But there are still people in the community and part of the fan base in that fishbowl that still think that next year we should have a 10-win season. You know what I mean? Just unrealistic expectations that aren't there yet. There are people that will still say, oh, we'll beat Michigan State. They'll look at a win on our, or they'll look at a game on our schedule and say it's a win. And I'll say, you cannot, in your right mind, guarantee any win on any of our schedules ever at this point. Everything is up for grabs right now. So the fishbowl is part of the problem that I think that we put so much pressure on a lot of these athletes and a lot of these coaches, and they feel it. And so that could be a big, big problem for not only our fan base, but for the team and the organization and the university as a whole. So the fishbowl has a big problem on that. It puts pressure on people that maybe in other states and other universities, I don't know, I'm not part of them. I feel like we take it to another level when it comes to pressure and expecting greatness because we've had it before.
That's a really interesting.
What about Notre Dame, Jeff?
Watch your mouth, right? I've been in that environment. I know what they're all about. They have their expectations and they meet them every year. That's all.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you. All right. So welcome back, Jeff. It's interesting the way that he asked the question. So a long way of asking, does an empty seat speak louder than a filled one? So the way Brett is thinking about it is, if we had voted with our feet, so to speak, as a fan base, more aggressively, to kind of the point you were making, Matteo, and only, you know, just say, screw the sellout streak, we're making a statement, this isn't good enough, then would things be different? I guess my question is, like, fans, I tend to side with way more how Jeff looks at it, because fans continuing to show up hasn't stopped us from firing coaches. The problem has been the dysfunction at the leadership level and the bad hires of coaches, right? So, like, what would more empty seats have done? Led to more firing sooner, right? And like, right? Like, would that have helped the program? Would more instability have helped the program if we had two more head coaches since Tom Osborne had retired, for instance, or three more head coaches since Tom Osborne retired? And so I know it's an interesting question, but I would say no. Like, I don't think the fan support has stopped the administration from making changes. I think the way to look at it is, has the intensity of the fan support, has the insanity with which, and I say that proudly, we all wear that as a badge of honor, the insanity with which we all are devoted to the Huskers, has that hurt the program because we're projecting 1990s era expectations onto kids in 2006 or 2016 or 2026 and coaches and everybody else? And then social media makes everything worse, and to all the, you know, podcasts make everything worse, and talk radio makes everything, like, there's so much out there. There's so many avenues for our angst and our vitriol now. And it's not just relegated to the your neighborhood bar or your neighborhood potluck or whatever, right?
Don't use that word in my presence.
Your holiday, your holiday family party. It's out there everywhere, right? So I kind of think about it as the enthusiasm and the fact that we continue to fill up the stadium. Like, I'm not sure what would have been different if we hadn't filled up the stadium as much, right? Yeah. But I do wonder, in a little bit more a darker, cynical way to look at it, has that passion fueled, like, I don't know, what's a couple different ways to look at this? One, I hate the man, as everyone knows, but would Bill Callahan have succeeded with more time?
Right? Mm-hmm.
Or Or what's another good, like, would Frank have succeeded with more time, right? Or fill in the blank. And like, and those firings happened because the intensity of the fan base. That's, and because
we have an influence on the decisions that the university is making.
I think we do. Yeah, and I think there, and maybe there was a concern that we'd stop filling up seats, right? If things kept, you know, after, you know, remember with Callahan, when things fell apart with Callahan, that sort of thing had not happened. His first year, we had a losing season. That was the kind of thing that had never happened in forever for most Husker fans at the time, their consciousness. And then he had a couple of good years. So then to have another bad season, it was like, this is holy cow, what's going on here? This doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
And then now we've just kind of become accustomed to it. And so, sorry, I feel like I'm the one babbling now, but I do think it's interesting to think about, like, I don't want to like piss people off. Are we the problem? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, are we projecting especially those of us of a certain age, are we projecting our 1990s era? And even for those of, like, for people who were paying attention in the 80s and the 70s, when we weren't always winning national titles, we were always in the top 10, pretty much. We were often winning the conference, and we were all very often in the national championship conversation. And then we won several titles in the 90s. Are we projecting those expectations onto, what doesn't matter, whatever the modern day is? Onto today's coaches, today's players. And two things, that has an impact in two major ways, in my opinion. One, I think it does force the issue with hirings and firings. And two, I do think, Jeff, to your point about the fishbowl, it does have an impact on players and coaches and their mental health, right? And like, I think was it Brandon Vogel talked about Anthony Calandria's chill. Mm-hmm. And he said, like, I think part of the point he was making was he hasn't played a game yet. Like, this place hasn't really gotten to him yet. Right.
Yeah.
He just showed up. He's being himself.
Yep.
Wait till you lose a game you shouldn't have lost in the fan base's eyes in October or something like that. Right. So what do you guys think about that?
I don't know. Like, I've kind of gotten behind you, TJ, on like the whole thing of like, we should never lower our expectations, right? We should always, because like, if you go down there on 10th and Vine and you walk around that stadium and you see like the new Osborne facility and how shiny and awesome and all that stuff is, in my mind, it's kind of freaking embarrassing that you have all this nice stuff and all these nice resources and it looks amazing and it's cool to go to a game. Everybody's tailgating. And then you go in and watch them lose. It's like putting lipstick on a pig. Like, I don't know. I myself, and thousands of others, part of our identity is that football program. That's how we grew up. You travel anywhere throughout the world, you have that N on your hat or you have that N on your chest. People still know what it means, except the conversation has changed. It's like, man, I remember when you guys used to be good. And there's a little part that it feels like I'm getting shanked in the ribs and they twist it a little bit because that's part of who we are. It's like woven into the fabric of who we are and how we grew up and what we do on fall Saturdays. So I don't want to protest and not show up. I want to still go. They need to get better at what they're doing down there what it is. You'll be even more profitable. Guess what? Dollars and cents. Guess what? Chancellor and administration. Imagine the profits you'd have if you make the dang CFP. That's nice, right? I don't think we're to blame. Our expectation, that the different question, I think, is not necessarily would an empty seat matter. It's, do our expectations need to be adjusted? Now, I think in some ways they have. Like, the reasonable people
they've been forced on us, new expectations.
Right. Like, we've been willing to say, hey, okay, you know what? We know we're not going to win 10. We know we're not going to go undefeated. Can you win 8?
Mm-hmm.
And they still haven't been able to do that. Okay.
Right.
But I'm not now going to say, well, maybe if you just get to 7, I'll be happy about that. And maybe this fall I will. But that's not an every year thing for me. Yeah. I'm going to say, gosh, I hope they just make a bowl game. Like that's like the, that's like some Iowa shit that I don't ever want to have as a mindset.
Yeah.
Like I don't ever want that. And now they've changed theirs. Like I'm sure there are not a lot of Iowa fans saying, well, if we just get to win 7 or 8, like they've changed too. That's what happens when you've had success, is your expectations increase.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we've had a couple good years where we've got to bowl games. Now we expect more. That's the natural progression
that the bar just
of how these things work. It. Jeff,
I said that, Matt. What the hell are you talking about?
But I do, there's probably a select few out there that think we're supposed to win every single game. And really, those of us that aren't reasonable about it, go on there on a Saturday night after we've lost a game we're not supposed to and see how rational and level-headed people are. It takes us, the three of us, a day or two or three to TJ. Get more reasonable and get more level-headed and be like, well, now, wait a minute, we weren't supposed to win that game anyway, and blah, blah, blah.
A week or two. TJ is still fretting about games from 2014.
Right.
It's true.
So I don't think that our expectations need to be lowered. I think they've been lowered. And I don't blame. I blame the. If there's anyone to blame, if we're looking for blame, it's blame the administration for terrible hirings,
yeah.
terrible firings,
yeah.
and we've never been able to regain our footing after all those.
What I would say there is that.
Hold on, Jeff. Before you go, I want to say it before I forget. It's very quick. To your point about it being part of our identity, Matty-O, pick a neighborhood in any city in Nebraska. Pick a neighborhood and pick a house. And walk into the basement, and there's at least a 50% chance that like a centerpiece of that basement is like a framed picture of like, you know, the run,
the Orange Bowl, yeah.
Corey Schlesinger from the Orange Bowl, or if there's a bar in the basement, there's at least some like crafty red N, you know, that somebody picked up at the church yep. Holiday fair or whatever. Right. It's always part of everyone's identity, right?
A framed like Sports Illustrated cover of Tom Osborne on the
plunge. Like an old autographed football. Like,
yes. Right. All right, Geoff, sorry, go ahead.
It's hilarious. No, Matt's right about, you know, setting the bar higher and higher, but trying to keep our expectations reasonable. But we're the classic example. We do it every year. At least you guys do. Maybe not me. I'm a little bit more reasonable and rational.
Stop patting yourself on the back. Is your shoulder okay from patting yourself on the back?
Feels great. Feels great. Yeah. By the time you get to August, you yahoos are already back on like the 10 win streak. Just mark my words, bookmark this, Common Fans. This August, these two will have us at 10 wins minimum for sure. Guaranteed.
Probably nine.
Second thing, if you want to place blame, I'm glad you mentioned the age thing, TJ. That's a good point. Anybody that's like 35 or older, it's our fault. I don't blame the younger generation because they really haven't been around the winningness that we once had. So anybody 35 and older, it's our fault if you're going to blame anything on the fans. Three, profitability. Yeah, the university's making a ton of money. I mean, the food costs on a Runza and a Valentino slice of pizza has got to be so minimal.
Oh my God, let it go.
I will battle you on the food and concessions. It is no different. I would argue the food is even more reasonably priced at Memorial Stadium than most big athletic venues throughout the country.
Let it go, Costanza. We do need to do a separate episode on like favorite all-time Memorial Stadium food items.
Oh yeah,
the food or drink.
That's a good off-season episode written.
That would be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So here's what. So I pose the question. I'm going to answer it from my perspective. I'm where you are, Matty-O. Here's the thing. Yes, our fan base is totally insane, and I say that it's in a good way, and I'm proud to say that. And I'm part of that. I'm part of the problem, Jeff. All right. Like, do you think it's any easier for the players in Tuscaloosa or Columbus, Ohio,
no,
or Ann Arbor, Michigan?
Yeah.
You think the pressure is less? You think that the fishbowl is less? No. No, it's not.
Man's game. Right?
That's right. Or where the hell's Georgia? Wherever Georgia is. And all these, I'm just trying to think of the top, you know, programs the last several years. Like, do you think they don't have their own recruiting websites and their own podcasts and their own psychos on Twitter? Sure. They all have all of that.
But
right?
for some reason, why are they able to bounce back and maintain and we're not? Like,
I don't know what the difference is. The main difference, in my opinion, to one of you said this, is the bad hires.
Mm-hmm.
We are a blue blood program. We are still in the top 10 all time in wins. We are number 2 all time in conference championships. We are whatever, top 10 or 15 in that with 5 national titles. If we claim national titles like some of these other schools do willy nilly, we'd be way up there higher, right? 3 Heisman trophies. And like, think about some of the hires we've made over the years.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Yeah.
Okay. Frank coming after Osborne, you could make the argument, at least, especially for the first, 3 or 4 years. Okay. It wasn't broke. They didn't have to fix it. Played for a national title, won a conference title. I don't think Frank was going to stay at that level, as we've discussed. Check out the Reckoning series, summer 2024. So Frank is like, okay, it's like Ryan Day at Ohio State. Like, you kind of don't fault anybody for that hire. But after you fire him, we've talked about this many times, like, Bill Callahan just had a losing season and gotten fired in the NFL. Bo Pelini had never been a head coach. Mike Riley, career 500 coach everywhere, 0 Big Ten experience. We did a whole series on this, guys, 6 episodes. So I'm not going to like relitigate the whole thing. Again, June and July 2024, you can find it in our episode history, The Reckoning. It will at least allow you to blow off some steam, get some Husker fan anguish off your chest, and try to make sense of this crazy world we've been living in. But the point is, like, we haven't acted like a blue blood. If you're gonna fire Frank Solich, you're gonna fire Bo Pelini after 9 wins. Go get a winner.
Yes,
go proven. Get a proven winner. And we haven't done that. And I at this point, one could argue Rule, however you feel about him, good or bad, was maybe the best coach we could have gotten in this scenario.
At that moment, yes.
At that moment, right? Because of how far we had fallen. Yeah. But prior to that, that wasn't the case. We were still Nebraska. And so I would say this, because I'm going to contradict myself. I think an episode or 2 ago, I was saying, we're not on board with firing Rule right now. And I don't think any of the 3 of us is on board with firing Rule right now. But, we've had so many firings that I don't think that instability would help right now. But I would also say, if Rule goes 6-6 the next year or 2, I'm going to be ready to fire him. And I say, you fire him, you fire people until you find the right guy. So I'm kind of contradicting myself, and I'm kind of all worked up now from what I said previously. But I, at this point in college football, with the transfer portal and with paying players and everything else, you fire, like, we should never lose those championship expectations. We should never lose those blue blood expectations. And I don't agree that, like, it goes away for like one too many 500 season or losing season. Somehow you lose it forever. I don't agree with that, but it does start
to
feel.
You don't use it, you lose it.
Right. It does start to feel further and further out of reach the longer it's been. And so I, for one, as a crazy Common fan, will not apologize for the insanity and will not apologize for the thousands of dollars I've spent going to home games and going to away games. And, the season tickets that have been in my family since my dad got them in the 80s or 90s or whenever all that was, like, that's what makes Nebraska unique. That's what makes Nebraska special. To Rule's credit, he, more than most, I think, has tried to embrace it and has never complained about it and has tried to, you know, embrace the fan support at every turn. That's an asset. That's an asset. If you're a winner, if you expect to win, that's an asset.
Mm-hmm. I think so, you could. He embraced it at first. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I think it's wearing on him.
Exactly. You've noticed in just his posture and his lack of being out there now. I do think that the fishbowl has kind of worn on him a little bit. He's been very, very quiet recently.
He didn't do himself any favors, though.
He didn't do himself any favors. Fishbowl, he was all over the place. He was all over everything. On your TV, you turn on your radio, you look on social media.
Zach Bryan
he was
concert.
All over it. Yeah. He's all over the place. He's at UFC fights and he's at the, like
ziplining.
Fishbowl, whatever. Like, dude, you're putting yourself out there.
And they're making ever increasing amounts of more money.
Yes.
And I think he's gonna make $10 million this year.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and see, that's the thing too. Like TJ, when you said that out loud, like just like the timeline, and you talk about, okay, Frank inherited the keys to the kingdom, whatever, from arguably the greatest coach of all time, and that was his handpicked successor. What are you supposed to do? Tell him, sorry, Tom, I think we're going to go a different direction. So that one's like, whatever. But after that, you know, I think about like that Athletic article from several, I think it was from The Athletic, several years ago that detailed the Callahan, and it was like 100 and some days.
Yeah.
It was Mitch Sherman, yeah. You know, thinking about that, and then like, you know, you end up hiring a guy that got fired somewhere, all right? And then the next one was Pelini, who had never been a head coach. Are the other blue blood programs also hiring coaches that were fired at their last stop or hiring a guy that was his first head job? No.
Right.
No. Like, why have we been like, oh, we better like hire a guy on a budget. Let's get the value guy for, and it's like, why?
Right.
Why have we done that? Like, yeah. I don't feel like it's ever been like, gosh, we don't, and I get it. If you're paying somebody a buyout, then you got to be smart about it or whatever. But like the money's been flowing through the coffers like crazy.
Right.
And then Riley, like that was like, it's insane. And again, go back and listen to The Reckoning. But when you say that out loud, like who we hired and when, you're just like, what the hell? What were we doing? Why couldn't we go and hire somebody that had a good season somewhere else? Hire him. Hire the guy that just did well somewhere else and in college football. Why did we that's never happened. We hired a defensive coordinator, or we hired a guy that got fired from the Raiders, or we hired a guy from Oregon State. We hired a guy that had only been a head coach for 2 or 3 years at Central Florida.
You could argue Matt Rule got fired too. You could argue Matt Rule's coming off of firing in the pros.
Yes. Yes, and wasn't even employed when we hired him.
Yeah,
wasn't even employed. Like so, when you say it out loud, it's like, well, yeah, no shit. Like no shit, you've had trouble because look at who you've hired. We've never really hired somebody like, oh, this guy was 10-2 in the Big 12 or 10-2 in the MAC, and he's the next up and coming guy. And we've never really done that.
Let me go on record and just say, I wanted Urban Meyer during that coaching search. Deion Sanders. I wanted all these things.
How's Deion been?
I know.
Glad we don't have that shit.
I like the big name hires and like just something that looks cool and draws eyes to us. Owens, I love the value comparison, the value and like the return
best
on your dollar.
Best choice brand.
Knock off Mountain Dew. Hee-haw.
Yeah. Hee-haw.
Bagged cereal. We hired
the Dr. Pepper one.
Oh,
Dr. Thunder.
We hire the bagged cereal coaches. That's what we
hired. We hired Dr. Thunder to coach our
Marshmallow Mateys and Coco Roos.
Chicago? No, Sheboygan. Very big in Sheboygan.
Very big in Sheboygan.
The Kenosha Kickers.
That's Mike Riley is the Kenosha Kicker of college. Riley, we talked about this on The Reckoning. 3 of his last 5 seasons at Oregon State had been losing seasons. He was on his way to getting fired. And the only thing he'd ever won in his life was a Grey Cup in the Canadian Football League in the early 90s. Yes. He had never won a conference title even in the Pac-12. And he had no experience in the Big Ten.
Yep.
I mean, so like that's like the others you could like that one makes me angry. And the Callahan one makes me angry. Like Pelini, okay, he had been a successful defensive coordinator at Nebraska. There was a hankering for him. Like you can at least like understand why they did it. Frost, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum. Frost, like, I feel like there would have been a collective meltdown in Husker Nation if we had not hired him. So there's some nuance to some of these. It's not quite that simple. But again, some of the misses have been so huge and so ridiculous. And I want to like steer it back to the point of this episode, which is, I don't think the fact that we keep showing up has like been an unintended consequence has been the demise of Husker football, because that white hot intensity is there in other places, and they've hired coaches that have managed it and have won anyway. You think Urban Meyer gives two? Well, actually, Urban Meyer has health meltdowns everywhere he goes, but he wins. Yes, he wins at least, right? Yeah, whatever. Or mental health meltdowns, whatever. But like the point, the bottom line, in my opinion, is no, we are not like inadvertent. We have not inadvertently caused the downfall of Nebraska football as fans. It has been poor leadership and poor decision making when it comes to hiring coaches. But end of story.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, like there's a lot of people to blame for that. Steve Peterson, Harvey Perlman, Sean Eichhorst, the sort of university leadership and the athletic department leadership, every step of the way. So I think that's where I come down. Now it's a different question though. I feel like, here's another interesting way to think about this. Now that we are where we are, so post 2016, what, two bowl games in 10 years, basically, two winning seasons in 10 years, the mighty have fallen mightily. Now that we are where we are, does that 1990s era expectations and fan support, like, does that make it harder for us to get back where we want to go? Or is it still hire the right guy and he'll figure it out?
Yeah, I think it's that.
I do too. He has to figure it out. Again, I am still holding out. The emails we're getting are really interesting. People, I think, are not as certain about Matt Rhule as they used to be, for sure. I'll just say that. But I think there's definitely still hope. This guy's done it before at other stops. He looks like he's willing to evolve and willing to change and willing to bring in new assistants and whatever. There's still hope that he can get there. That's the ideal scenario. I think the ideal scenario is not another firing and hiring, I think, right now. Right. I'm telling you, I know myself well enough. I usually try to be objective and not overly dramatic. I think if they go 6-6 this year, I might be out on him. Like already.
Yeah, that's a big...
I keep saying two or three more seasons of 6-6. Let's be honest. If he goes 6-6, I don't care how hard the schedule is. The fans are going to be restless.
Yeah. Yeah, rightfully so or not. And they should be.
I think they should be. How much time do you need?
A boatload of money.
Right.
Right. Right. And then he was supposedly the 3-year fixer guy. I think it depends on what it looks like, right? If it's 6-6 and, you know, I'll remind you, just a few years ago, we were talking about our best 3-9 team of all time and how close they were, you know, close enough to give Scott Frost all that extra time. So if it's 6-6 and we played all the big boys close, then I'm going to say, hey, where was the patience, you know, for this guy? We had it for this guy, but not for this guy. I think it depends what it looks like, but I wholeheartedly agree with you because not everyone's going to look at that very level in a very level-headed way, right? When your record's worse in your fourth year than it was in your second and third year, I don't care where you are, that's not good, and it's not gonna pull well. Let's say
not gonna pull well. Indeed,
if it took Fred Hoyer. I mean, again, Fred had increasingly good teams for the most part the last 3 years and made the tournament a few years ago. But if it takes him 7 years, like it took Fred 7 years, I might die before we get there.
That's what I was going to say too. Is like we've done the hiring firing thing. Is it this time, okay, as long as it doesn't get worse, let's just be patient. It doesn't do that.
I mean, maybe, but for how long? Eventually you can't live with seven years.
You know, I'm kind of with you. 7 years of 6 or 7, you know,
I don't think you're five, year six.
If we're year four, you're 5 year six, not when it's 6 or 7. Yeah. I don't,
it's a brand
I don't
new
think he makes it.
Football.
I don't know if he makes it to year
teams
seven.
Don't do that anymore.
if that's what's going on.
Teams don't
I think regardless of what fans want or believe, however bad things could, like whatever you're envisioning of a worst case scenario this year, I think he still hangs on for the after 20. Like this is year four. In my opinion, it is a pivotal year four, and we'll talk about a lot more in the offseason. It's a critical year for him to show improvement. But let's say, like, let's reverse that, and whatever you could envision as a worst case scenario, unless they do something crazy like 0-12 or something. Like, I just don't. It's hard to see him getting fired after this year. But I think if he underwhelms this year, I think he's firmly on the hot seat going into year five. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Geoff, were you going to say something?
No, I said when we're talking about just like letting him hang on and be patient, I just feel like that era of college football is gone now. I just, with the way players can
change. Everybody, fair or not, everyone's going to look at Cignetti.
Yeah, exactly. That's the comparison everybody lives up to now, and it sucks, but that's the way it is.
I knew Mo, talking loud.
Boy, were you on that one.
I was. For any new Common Fan listeners who haven't been with us the last year and a half or so, Cignetti showed up in the Big Ten, started saying they were going to win everything at Indiana. And I made fun of him a lot. And I referred to him as Mo Green from The Godfather, talking loud, saying stupid things. And I was wrong. And I've eaten the crow. I've digested the crow. The crow has been consumed. And we grudgingly respect Kurt Cignetti now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Touché.
Geoff, let's switch gears. You had your buddy's text, I think, is kind of an interesting discussion.
Yeah, since we're just on the topic of just fan submissions and things like that, I work with a lot of people that are big fans of the podcast, right? I've got a lot of coworkers that listen regularly, which is pretty awesome. So
shout out to Geoff's coworkers. Thank you.
Coworkers, for listening friend. And supporting the pod.
Thanks for being a friend of the program.
Yes. One in particular, his name's Michael. I won't give his full government here, but we'll just go with Michael for this one. But he had a request because he'll come over to my desk and he has ideas for the show or questions. He always wants to talk Husker, anything related. So like basketball this year was big for him, but coming off the season that Husker basketball had, there's been the discussion now, like, is Nebraska a basketball school? Because football just hasn't been really panning out over the last few years. So basketball school is the terminology people use. And he had something that he said, and this is just a text message where it says, basketball school, quote unquote, is a term for schools that have never been good at football, in his assumption, except for maybe Duke, because they have a special arena, an entire school based on basketball, period. But any regular school like a Kansas or Arizona or Indiana, in his opinion, would absolutely rather be good at football once they taste football success. Like Indiana is definitely going to be a football school first now or for the foreseeable future. Do you agree or disagree with anything that he said? Are football schools, would most schools rather be a football school than a basketball school? Or what do you think? I would rather be a football school in Nebraska, personally.
1,000%. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure we've done enough to claim that we can be a basketball school yet.
Sure. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I think anyone would rather be a football school because of this. It goes back to the money, baby.
Yeah.
There's way more money involved.
As a fan, though, Matteo, I think if you're at UNC, North Carolina, occasionally they've had decent football teams. Mm-hmm. But, like, let's look at it the way we always talk about it. Are they watching their football team and just kind of hoping for some wins, and they're not losing any sleep after a 6-6 season, and they're pivoting, and they're like, hey, it's November. I'm ready for basketball. I think those schools who grew up, or Duke, or Kansas is an interesting one. I mean, I think of them as always sucking at football, but they had a few good years.
Some success here and there,
But I think for some of those schools, I guess the question is, like, does the UNC common fan, who his mindset is reversed, where he doesn't lose his mind over football games, but he does like live and breathe with the basketball season, would that fan choose football? If you had the genie giving you three wishes, would the first one be football success?
What if Belichick just went on a run after they had that hire initially? Like, what if he just inexplicably took him to the playoff like right away? Would UNC fans trade away basketball to be in that realm of competitive football where they're good?
No, and I don't think.
What would they prefer?
I don't think Indiana's ready to say, no, we're not a basketball school anymore. It's similar. I think it's like similar the similarities between us and Indiana, you know, with the role reversal,
right.
Like, I'm not ready to say we don't care about football anymore and we're a basketball school now. Like, I'm not ready to do that.
Yeah, no, right.
Why can't we have both? Like,
let's see what happens
there's
next.
So many schools like Florida, Texas, I think of those two. You know, and UCLA's been good at, you know, good enough at both. At
Michigan. Times.
Like, yeah. Michigan.
Yeah, that's
Michigan.
A good one.
Like, no, like, it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, I get that people are going to predominantly identify you as one or the other, but, like, I don't know. And it'll be interesting this fall when we say, no, what I'm going to finish my first point. Indiana's not ready to be like, hey, we don't care about basketball anymore. It's too ingrained in them. It's like us with football.
Right.
It's too ingrained in there. Freaking Bobby Knight and Hoosiers and Indiana basketball and Larry Bird's from Indiana and blah, blah, blah. Like, they're not ready to do that. And I don't think, and I think if you asked Indiana fans, they're not ready to be like, no, who cares about it anymore? We're a football school now. Like, I'm pretty sure they're probably not saying that.
If we get to the tournament again next year and we make another run, I'm a basketball fan now. The Husker football team, I don't care about them anymore.
No. See, it's nice. It's nice. It's nice because thank you for putting him backstage. It's nice because that there, what you just said, like, hey, here comes November again. How are Matt and the boys going to do? Are they going to fall on their face again? And if they do, it's like, oh, turn the page. Fred and the boys are, you know, Fred and the boys season is coming right down the pike. We'll be ready for that. And that I'm okay with that.
That's fine.
If football's not getting the job done and doing what you want them to do, and you're ready to kind of call it a season at the end of the year when it hasn't gone the way you wanted it to,
sure,
you got something to look forward to.
There you go. It's great.
Yeah.
100%. Did that answer your question, Michael? If you're listening right now, Michael, did that answer your question?
Michael, if you want to listening, Michael.
If you want to further the discussion, Michael, send us an email, commentfangbr@gmail.com.
Please send us an email, Michael. Yeah. Thanks, Michael. All right, Michael.
Calm down. Michael. Calm down. Jesus, Steph. Let the boy sleep in your bed. Saturday Night Live reference.
He's a good, clean boy.
He's a good, clean, early boy.
All right. Good discussion, guys. Good, healthy discussion. We were a little worried that after last week's episode, which was about whether or not Nebraska fans are turning on Matt Rhule, maybe this would be, we didn't want this to be another negative one, but we thought it was like a good bookend kind of to that discussion. Sure. And now we can kind of pivot forward. And
Butthole. So I love these conversations. I'm a negative butthole.
Hey, negative, you know, but we're not shying away from the real stuff.
This is how people are feeling.
These are the conversations being had in the coffee shops all over the windswept plains, John.
By the fellow common fans.
Yes, that's right.
I'd like to think they've got the Common Fan podcast episode on in the background for the coffee shop.
Two
dudes in their mid-50s drinking coffee at a McDonald's in Holdridge right now. Hashing out things for this coming Husker football season.
Yeah.
And they're like, can you believe what that asshole Jeff said?
What a butthole.
What a butthole.
I wish that guy would stop talking about Notre Dame. That's why I'm going to have to stop listening soon.
What's his
problem? We have to read all those emails sometime. Yeah, exactly. Everybody's complaining about Jeff and Notre Dame.
Hate mail.
All right, common fans. Hey, be kind to each other. Thanks for hanging with us. It's only April. We got a while to the season. We're working on our summer series this year. That's very exciting. Working on some new guests. We got a lot hopping here at the Common Fan HQ. So stick with us. And, you know, we're getting there. Soon it's going to be May and we're going to be closer and closer to football season. And, I'm already starting to get excited. But to Jeff's point about how it would be 10-2 by August, like, the worm is kind of turning for me. I'm starting to get pretty excited. So
yeah.
I don't want to let on, you know, the outrage about how the last season ended still comes through sometimes, but
sure.
Starting to get pretty excited. So, all right. Any final thoughts, guys?
No.
All right.
I just want to go back. Like I'm so thankful every time we get those emails, keep the emails coming.
Yeah.
You know, we don't always get to them right away, but we do love seeing what you guys had to say about certain episodes or topics. Or any of that stuff, and it's just still such a thrill for us to get any feedback whatsoever on the show. And
if there's any negative feedback, we love the common fan community. I'm crumpling that shit up and I'm throwing it in the trash. I don't want to hear it. Good vibes only, common fans.
Good vibes only. No, share whatever you want. Don't worry about Jeff's thin skin. I think a good way to sum this episode up is this is the life we've chosen, and only one thing is certain. The Common Fans do not need to apologize. And I don't mean us three. I mean Husker Nation.
Husker Nation.
We don't need to apologize for our passion and for our love for this program. It's the program and the apparatus at the university that need to figure it out.
That's right.
This is the life we've chosen, and there's only one guarantee. There will be no apologies from the Common Fans and Husker Nation.
Very good.
All right. All right, Common Fans, thanks for hanging with us. We will be back at you soon. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Holy moly! Man, woman, and child did that. Put them in the aisles.
And Nebraska takes the lead. National championship is Nebraska.